When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, hello. Welcome to another episode of the Punt Intended Podcast, a Dynasty Fantasy Basketball podcast and a Sports Ethos production. As always, I am your host, Mark C., the Dynasty leader at Sports Ethos. You can find me at MacAttack145 on Twitter and my writings and rankings over at SportsEthos.com. And today, I am very excited to have a guest on, William of the All Rookie Podcast, where he does some great work scouting these rookies and prospects closely on his pod. William, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Mark. Glad to finally be doing a pod with you. We've been both doing a lot of work for Sports Ethos. I'm glad we can combine our talents on this episode.
Yeah, especially with this draft class, which, I mean, I think everyone who's paid attention to the draft somewhat closely has heard all the talk of this being a very polarizing draft, a very out there draft, and one where you really almost need to trust your scouting instincts. Do you think that's pretty fair to say on this draft?
Yeah, I think for the casual fan or for the, you want to say like the lazy ESPN type of people, you know, they're not going to see any all-stars right away. You know, you're going to have to dig a little deeper, but you are going to have a lot of players that will be able to contribute to a team. So even guys in the second round this year, I think you'll see getting minutes as opposed to last year. That was a more talented class thought of, but there's a lot of players that did not play their first year. So I think this year we'll have a lot more players that can play a role right away.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. And I think it's with your point about, we know players in almost every draft class, really, they'll develop into all-stars, but the problem is sometimes identifying them. And right. I think this year it's, you know, the identification of which players are going to pop. I think that's that's going to be the struggle, I think, for a lot of us and dynasty managers. And we're trying to find all-stars. I mean, obviously I'm not, you know, all-stars in the on-court and for fantasy may be a little different, but if you're an on-star in the NBA, you're probably an all-star in fantasy too, and that's the players we want in Dynasty. Right. So with that said, let's go to some players that we think are a little undervalued and we think could maybe pop some. And the first guy I want to bring up is Isaiah Collier. He was drafted to Utah at the 29th pick, and I'm high on him, but I'm pretty sure you're even higher than him. So I'll let you start here. What do you see in him, and why do you think he dropped so much?
I wish I knew why Isaiah Collier dropped so much. I don't understand it. To me, he's the most talented player in this draft class. I'm sure everyone's been listening to the All Rookie Podcast. I'm tired of hearing me talk about Isaiah Collier and seeing him slip to 29. But I think the Jazz got a great value, obviously, with him and Cody Williams. You know, Isaiah was my number one ranked player. Cody Williams was my number three ranked player. They got them both. So, he's going to be a great piece for them. They can use his talents because I think it's time to probably start moving on from Jordan Clarkson and Colin Sexton, if not this year, next year. And then that's going to open a path for Isaiah Collier, and we'll see if he can play along Keontae George. But, you know, being drafted 29th as far as your fantasy value, it's kind of makes it scarier. Even though I think he's the most talented, being drafted that late, the team's not going to prioritize you as much. So that's some things you have to consider.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. I mean, I think we can sometimes anchor to draft selection picks, and they don't matter, but they also do matter. Because as you said, I mean, usually teams will want to make themselves look good. So if they drafted a player high, it's what we want to try to make them work out. No, I mean, I think we saw that with the Warriors and James Wiseman for years and years when it was pretty clear to everyone else they need to move on from him. And so, yeah, Collier being drafted 29th, it's a little bit of the opposite. But what makes him so appealing to you, and what could make him appealing for us dynasty managers? I mean, for me, I see that the rim penetration, and I think he's the best at creating his own advantage. Is that kind of the same thing? And you can see him as being that, you know, get into the paint, rack up points and assists kind of player?
Yeah, definitely. He didn't get that many assists at USC because he was not surrounded by a lot of talent. So I think people may have looked at that negatively, but I think when he gets with better talent, that will be there. Like you mentioned with his rim pressure, He can get anywhere on the court he wants at any time. He's a dynamic player with his speed and with his size, with being one of the bigger point guards, not just height-wise, but size, girth. He would back down point guards, one of the few point guards in college that would do that with his size. A lot of point guards in this class were 170 pounds, you know, 180. He's 205, so he had that strength with that. So he just, when it's not many players you watch film on and you say, whoa, that's, he's dynamic. He's electrifying. He was one of those guys. So I think if he gets the opportunity, he'll be able to bring that out. But it, we'll just see when that will happen. Because, you know, they had Keontae George last year. They kind of eased him into the rotation. We wanted him to play early on. I was high on Keontae George. He was my sixth-ranked player last year, and he went 16th. So, you know, I think they could have another situation like that this year.
I think it's a great point that you made about, you know, the Jazz bringing along players slowly. And, you know, if I have Collier, I think, definitely higher in my rankings than what he was drafted at. But we saw the Jazz, I mean, Keontae George, took him a little bit of time to integrate. Taylor Hendricks was stashed in the G League for a long time until basically post-trade deadline. And then, I mean, I thought he looked pretty solid after. So, you know, if he doesn't play right away, Isaiah Collier, I don't think we should be surprised, considering he was a 29th pick, considering they probably want to get him integrated and they have some guards ahead of him. You're going to have to be patient with him if you draft Isaiah Collier. But we can see that lead guard creation that you mentioned too. And another point that I liked that you made was with his USC team, that wasn't really a great team. I know they had, you know, legendary Bronny James, 55th overall pick. We don't need to get into the details and all the, you know, hubbub surrounding that. But yeah, they really weren't that talented of a team. And I think that's something that can be easy to ignore if we're just, as dynasty managers, maybe checking out on a player's stats and seeing, oh, well, you know, Isaiah Collier, maybe he struggled with his field goal percentage or turnovers or assists. Well, he had to do so much creation for that team and do a lot that, yeah, I mean, some of those stats aren't going to look as good as maybe, you know, UConn's player stats, who had an amazing team, an amazing system, and probably the best college coach. So I'm glad that you brought that up too. Any further comments on Collier and that team for maybe those who didn't watch as much?
Right. Yeah, no, you nailed it with that. And I love your point about if he was on UConn or some other team. Yeah, I do believe some of the players that were on better teams were bumped up in this class, you know, because like Jared McCain, it's no way near, he's better than Isaiah Collier, you know, but he was on Duke. So that gives him that advantage. Stephon Castle being on UConn and, you know, his height, obviously, but saying he could play the one or two. I think if Isaiah Collier was not on USC, it would definitely be a different story about his name this year.
All right. Now, maybe transitioning to a player that we maybe think is overrated. Since you brought him up, let's go Stephon Castle next. Drafted by the San Antonio Spurs on 4. And I think I've seen a lot of different opinions on him, you know, even in this draft class that people have a variety of takes on. What is your take on Stephon Castle?
Well, he was my 16th ranked player because scouting him, I saw him as a good shooting guard, you know. So, but then there was talk that he's going to be a point guard. He's only going to work out for teams to be a point guard. And then that was boosting him up. I don't know. The fact that he was at UConn, he said that he played a limited role to win. He's much more than that. And people were referring to the high school tape. So there's a lot of talk around his name, you know, but we need to see it on the floor. What I saw on the floor was a good, solid shooting guard. And right now the Spurs have him listed as the starting shooting guard since they brought in Chris Paul. So that's good for fantasy, though, to know that he's going to be starting. Being a fourth pick, you would expect that. But it looks like he's going to be starting, and Devin Vassell is going to be the three. As of right now, we'll see what happens with the summer league and everything. But I think he'll just be a solid selection. If he was a point guard, I'd be higher on his value because he would get more assists. But being a shooting guard, you're just going to kind of be an average player for fantasy.
I'm pretty much in agreement with you there. I think you can read the fact that they brought in Chris Paul two ways. One is the first way is he brought in to maybe mentor Castle and others and, you know, teach them the ways of the trade. Or is he there because they don't necessarily think Castle is either ready for that or can maybe become that sort of passing on-ball player? I mean, that's you brought it up with UConn in the system, and we've now talked about that a couple times, but UConn put their players in very good positions, and Castle, he either wasn't needed to maybe be that on-ball guy as much, or he couldn't do it as well. I frankly struggle. I went back and forth on him. I don't think he can really be that on-ball guy. The tape really doesn't show it too much in terms of, you know, running pick and roll, leading the offense. Can he do it in spurts? Maybe, but I think, I guess on that note, would you buy into him as being eventually developing into an on-ball guy that can give points, usage, assist, and really, you know, 5-6 assists plus, or is he maybe just going to be that connector type and be maybe one of those players that just impacts winning really nicely, maybe along with the defensive side, and one of those players that doesn't necessarily translate to fantasy as much?
Yeah, I don't really see the on ball. I see the connector type, and you know, he will specialize in defense though. So if you're looking for blocks and steals, rebounds from a shooting guard, he will provide that. But the passing, I'm just not sure, you know, because their point guard, Tristan Newton, was drafted 53rd or something by the Pacers.
Yeah, something like that.
And so, you know, it's not like it was talent for talent. You know, I know they played the veteran, but if he was that good at point guard, there was games they could have had him in there running the point. So, and don't forget they have Trey Jones as well. So it could be a while. It definitely won't happen this year. But obviously, I don't think Chris Paul will be there next year. Things would have to change with their team. But I think when you have Victor Wembanyama, you're going to want a true point guard in there. You're not going to want to be experimenting, having the shooting guard play point. You know, that happened last year with Jeremy Sochan, and that didn't work out too well.
No, I can maybe somewhat understand their motivation, just trying them out and seeing where it goes. But it was a pretty abject disaster that I thought they stuck with way too long.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, so in terms of Castle, I mean, it sounds like we both think he's going to get good minutes, probably starting. We'll see what other moves, but at the very least getting good minutes. So, you know, you can't produce if you don't get minutes. But it sounds like we both question maybe, okay, what is that exact production? That might be a little bit of an unknown early on.
Yeah.
All right, let's move to Cody Williams. You brought him up earlier as a guy who was third on your board. I personally was a little lower on him, so I'm going to give you the floor to try to maybe talk me into him, not just for real life, but also for fantasy.
Right. Well, you know, the talk of the Jazz right now is Lauri Markkanen could be on the trade block. They're trying to move him possibly. I think they would bring in a small forward if they do that. But if they don't, you know, Cody Williams would be instant minutes right there. You know, drafted 10th overall, pretty good draft capital. And I think Cody Williams is a piece that can play a role or can eventually turn into a player that starts to look out for his own shot. He was kind of reserved at Colorado. He could do much more than what he did at Colorado, I feel. He may be too unselfish, so that'll have to be coached into him. But with the 6'9 frame, the shooting ability, he can shoot the ball very well. The long arms, you know, his body type is Brandon Miller. He just has to have the attitude of Brandon Miller. He can get there maybe in 2 years or 3 years.
So I do agree with you on some of the flashes that we've seen, but I think what worries me is that unselfishness or maybe passive play, hesitant play. However you want to categorize that, you know, he only had an 18% usage in college, which it's kind of fine for the NBA level, but it's still below average. And if you're going from college to the NBA, you probably expect that to drop down unless he really develops and really takes charge. Do you think he can translate those smaller flashes into that larger role and just expand out with those, I guess, measurements and projectable skills?
Yeah, I definitely think he will project into doing more. And we have to remember he was with a dominant on-ball point guard with KJ Simpson, who was a senior. So he probably was a freshman in there, not wanting to rock the boat too much. He's like, I want the ball, but I can't say anything as a senior right here, scoring 20 points per game. So when he goes to – fortunately, he went to the Jazz. That's a younger team. You know, like we said, we got Keontae George and Isaiah Collier going to be distributing for him. They're going to be of his age group, like a year older than him, as opposed to 3 or 4 years older than him. So, and coaching might have to light a fire under him. I don't know. I remember Harrison Barnes when he played for the Tar Heels. You know, I'm in North Carolina, but you could see the talent in Harrison Barnes, and it's like, shoot the ball more. You know, he never really became a selfish player, But he still had a long, solid career. So I think that's the floor for him. And but if he steps it up, it could be really good for the Jazz.
So on that Harrison Barnes note, if you're a dynasty manager, you know, and you're looking at Cody Williams, maybe you're in your, I don't want to say mid-late lottery, depends on your league size, but in kind of that, you know, around 10 pick, are you really excited if you're drafting Harrison Barnes, who, I mean, yes, nice NBA player for a long time, but for fantasy was kind of rather unremarkable? Are you okay with that?
Well, for that, well, I'm saying I think of him higher than Harrison Barnes. I'm saying his floor is Harrison Barnes.
That's fair.
But yeah, when you get past pick 6, 7, maybe 10, maybe you're okay with the top 11 picks in this draft. Other than that, it's kind of shots in the dark, honestly. So you just got to get the best player on the board with the best ability to get minutes. I probably would take Matas Bezelis over him, but I'm still higher on Cody Williams than the majority of people. It just is not going to happen this year.
Okay, so transitioning.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
From Cody Williams, you know, maybe a frailer, not frailer, but smaller prospect who needs to fill out a little bit more, but we can see, you know, potential with him. Let's move to Zach Edey, who is an absolute behemoth. Senior out of Purdue, who went to Memphis, which I think was a very interesting landing spot. What was your instant reaction when you saw the Memphis Grizzlies select Zach Edey?
Well, Memphis was in an interesting position because they are more talented than that 9th overall selection. We know why they fell to that, John Morant injuries, etc. So they didn't feel like they needed to reach for a superstar. They were okay with getting a need, a role specifically. And they think Zach Edey can provide that. He was dominant in college. I think he should be able to fill that need for them. The only issue is, you know, he's 7'4", 300 pounds. We don't really see too many players like that come into the league, play big minutes. He did that in college. He was very healthy in college for the most part. And I don't think they'll need him to play 30 minutes a game. He'll probably share the court with Jaren Jackson Jr. at times, and then at times be on the court without him. But he'll probably be a 20 to 25 minute per night guy. And for fantasy, I think he will definitely provide you with blocks, rebounds, and just blocks and rebounds, really.
So on that note, you didn't mention points and field goal percentage. Do you think the Grizzlies, when Zach Edey's on the court, will they have to try to get him involved to try to maybe make up for, I'll call it perceived defensive issues. I think it's greater than that, but we'll just say perceived defensive issues and try to maximize what he can do on offense, or they'll just kind of run the offensive flow and then Edey will get his in the flow of the offense.
I think he'll get his in the flow of offense. You know, they have Desmond Bane, John Morant. They are dynamic offensive players. And I think the whole team it's just a really good team. You know, he's not coming in to be a savior. He's just coming in to play his role. So he's going to be great on the offensive boards. And but, you know, he has not developed his offensive game to the level of the Grizzlies where they are right now. They're trying to win a championship. So they're not going to be worried about, you know, passing in to Edey to get his touches. He's just going to have to get in where he fits in.
I think that's a great way to put it because, I mean, Edey's not like, I mean, he's a pretty accomplished post player, but there's still a difference between NBA or college post game to NBA post game, let alone NBA offenses, which hey, you got, as you said, John Morant, Desmond Bane, and Jaren Jackson Jr. himself. You've got some pretty good offensive options in that starting unit and just on the team in general that they may prefer to give more touches to still, even though they have Zach Edey in the building. I think that's going to be interesting to track. I never thought of it that way before. I really like the way you put that with, now I forgot which way you put it, but Edey being able to just go up to the Grizzlies offense, I think it's going to be a good storyline to track. Let's move to now Denver, where the first guy we'll talk about is Daron Holmes II, who the Nuggets did trade up for, drafted at 22, I believe, after they traded up to the Phoenix Suns. What do you think of his fantasy game? I mean, he was someone who I thought was very productive in college, he stayed a year maybe longer than he needed to. I thought maybe he was ready to come out last year and contribute at the NBA level, but stayed an extra year, I think, worked on his outside shot game. Do you think he can kind of be one of these unicorn light bigs providing a variety of stats, or it's just more this energy big off the bench?
It's going to be interesting with Denver because last year they drafted a guy, Hunter Tyson, in the second round. I wasn't high on him, but when the summer league happened, he was one of the top three players in summer league. And he's a power forward that was a great shooter, 6'10", excellent shooter. He did not sniff the court the whole season after playing tremendous in the summer league. So now you have Daron Holmes coming in. He should be competing for backup center, backup power forward minutes. But like I said, will they play him? I would expect so, because this is a first-round pick compared to a second-round pick. And they did trade up for him, like you said. But then again, you have Denver, who's trying to win the championship. Championships teams do not really want to play rookies. You know, they want to play Jokic. They want to play Aaron Gordon. They want to play Michael Porter Jr. They're going to have Peyton Watson come in. But I think he will not have to do too much to beat out Zeke Nnaji for sure. He should be guaranteed above him. And Peyton Watson's a little small for the four for me. So it's possible. But Daron Holmes is not a finished product either. You know, he still has some things to do. He's a little weak in the paint, but he can come in and get a few minutes. But I wouldn't be too high on him.
Yeah, I hope he can beat out Zeke Nnaji just because I've been thoroughly unimpressed and burned by him many times where I'm like, oh, he has length potential. And then I don't want to blame injuries on him. That can just happen, but hasn't lived up to the billing, let's say. But, and you mentioned all this, I think, you know, Denver has been avoiding the second apron, cough, being cheap, I'd say cheaping out, and they're seeming to turn to these rookies or, you know, low late first round picks, early second round picks. They also drafted Julian Strother and Jalen Pickett, who none of them really saw the floor all too much. So I want to believe in Daron Holmes. I think he can contribute. But as you said, it's hard for a rookie to contribute, and he's not a finished product yet, even though he's an older prospect. Yeah. Do you think his three-point game, I think that's what's really intriguing as fantasy managers. I know whenever I see a big man that has flashing shooting ability, you know, my alarm bells go off because that's a sexy pick, a rookie who can also shoot threes. Do you think his three-point game can translate as we kind of saw that increase over the years?
I do think he can, because not just threes, he's just a good shooter, period. So, you know, that bodes well for him. It's not a fluke, he scored 20 points per game, 8.5 boards, 2 blocks. So if he gets his feet under him, if the Nuggets feel the need to put him in the game, which we all want to see, we want to see the young stars play. Like you said, Strother flashed really nicely for the Nuggets. Now I think he got hurt, and then that was the end of that.
Yep.
I think Daron Holmes, give him a year, and then I think it will be what we want him to see. I think this first year is going to be in and out of the lineup, you know, learning his role.
All right, so Daron Holmes, you know, don't be too concerned with him if he's, you know, has a bit of inconsistent minutes, but year two might be the one we're expecting him to pop off. So, again, be willing to show a little bit of patience with these younger players.
And you've got to remember, they have Michael Porter Jr. He gets hurt a lot, so – that could move Aaron Gordon to the three. That could get, you know, Daron Holmes some minutes because they do not have a lot of depth. So it is possible.
I was going to say I like the sound of that, but then that sounds like I like the sound of players getting injured, which I don't like. I like players healthy and competing. But it would be – I want to see Daron Holmes play with even Jokic and AG. I think that'd be a fun combination out there.
I think so.
All right, let's move to another kind of big who maybe a big slash forward who can shoot some, and Tyler Smith, drafted to the Milwaukee Bucks at 33, I believe, and maybe a slight drop off there. But where do you think he fits in the NBA? Do you think he needs a little bit more polishing and just development and growth to be a big, or do you think he's more of a bigger four who can extend his range beyond the arc?
I think a little bit like Alex Saar, you know, he's kind of a five that wants to play the four. I think Tyler Smith can play the five or four, especially the way the NBA is now. You know, you have the Chet Holmgrens, the Wembanyamas, the smaller, skinnier bigs. There's not too many Jokic's and Embiid. So I think the four and the five is becoming interchangeable a little bit. So I think I have no clue. I want to know why Tyler Smith fell to the second round. The Bucks drafted with their first round selection, a guy, if they would have swapped them, it would have made more sense.
We're not even going to talk about AJ Johnson.
Yeah.
He was kind of a little out of sight, out of mind for me. When we popped up at 23, I was doing triple takes.
That was shocking. Yes. But yeah, Tyler Smith, I had him ranked sixth because, like I said, this draft has a lot of safe players at the top. To me, Tyler Smith has all-star potential if he's given the opportunity. Unfortunately, second round is going to be tough. But ahead of him, you know, they have Jay Crowder, Bobby Portis, Danilo Gallinari. That's not too tough to beat out. But again, championship contender, will they play the young fellow?
Yeah, we saw a little bit of that, I think, with Andre Jackson Jr., Marshawn Beauchamp the past two seasons. And you can argue if those players were ready for the rotation, but they definitely didn't get really a fair shot. So with Tyler Smith, though, you mentioned you think he has all-star potential. Do you think that's going to come in the form of him developing into a big who can protect the rim and then also be a great shooter as well? I mean, his percentages in the G League and his volume were both very encouraging. Do you think he can develop some on-ball game as well, some perimeter game? You mentioned, you know, fives, you like to play the four. That usually maybe has some dribbling skills as well and maybe even some self-creation. Do you see that in the future for Tyler Smith?
Yes. I mean, I think he can do everything on offense. You know, he's a super athlete. Dunks everything in sight, you know, great size. He can hit step back three out there at times. You know, I think he probably took the hardest hit from playing with the G League Ignite. You know, it was a lot of guys that were 6'10", 6'11", playing the same role. No real point guard. So you just had to go by projections and flashes. So I don't know what they didn't like seeing Tyler Smith, because he was the best shooter of the three bigs at 36% from three and only 22 minutes per game. He put up good numbers. But it makes no sense to me that he was not a lottery pick, in my opinion, in this class. He reminds me of John Collins. So, you know, you can kind of expect that. I think he might be more of a five than John Collins, but pretty similar to John Collins.
All right, well, I'm probably going to keep a closer eye on him in summer league and see if we see more of those flashes, especially, as you said, outside the G League context, which was so horrible this year. They don't have anyone to set up. So I think the fact that he actually played as well as he did, or rather with the stats, I think, in that three-point shooting, I think is actually a pretty strong testament to him. Let's move on to Khalil Ware of the Miami Heat, drafted 15th, who, you know, a player who kind of struggled his first year in college at Oregon and then transferred to Indiana for his sophomore year, where I think he had a bit more encouraging all-around play. But we still saw some of the, I'll call it energy issues or lack of urgency issues. Did you see that same thing? And I guess, what are your thoughts on Khalil Ware at the hashtag Heat Culture Center?
Right. I'm big on Khalil Ware. I had him as my eighth ranked prospect. The offensive game is there. The defensive game is there. He averaged a double-double. The blocks are there. Like, he is the ideal center for today's NBA, in my opinion. The only knock people say on him is the motor. I try not to take that into account when I'm scouting, because we don't know why a guy is looking a certain way. You know, he could have had a death in the family. He could be hurt. A lot of times guys are hurt and do not ever say anything about it, et cetera, et cetera. But I would have to feel, if you love basketball, you want to go to the NBA. When you get to the NBA, you're not going to be, you know, not successful for a lack of effort, I would think. And if that is your concern, he went to one of the best destinations in Miami. If he doesn't get in conditioning, he won't touch the floor. So Pat Riley, the Heat culture, is a perfect landing spot for him. I'm going to be interested to see if Bam is going to play the five or four. I don't know how high they are on him to where they would just start him from day one. But I would expect Miami will probably have to make him earn it. But they seem to be high on him.
I definitely agree on the skill set of Ware. Being able to provide those some shooting ability, it was a little inconsistent on the volume, but the percentages was, I mean, still, I think it was, you know, 33% overall his whole college sample, which, I mean, for a big, that's pretty solid. That's very respectable. And someone who can get those blocks, get those boards, get those field goal percentage. But, so, I'm going to push back a little bit on the motor. And when I was scouting him, and I hated writing this note. It felt kind of slimy, not slimy, but a little maybe disingenuous. As you said, I don't know the player. I don't know what he was dealing with, but he kind of looked, I saw some shades of DeAndre Ayton in his game where you see, you know, Ware and Ayton both have, are well built physically, but it looks like they're just not applying themselves fully. Yeah. And you might've answered this earlier, but do you think that's a fair comparison or that's maybe a little harsh to Ware?
It's just hard for me to have any opinion on motor, really. I mean, DeAndre Ayton still was the first pick in the draft, but yes, he's had some issues in the NBA, of course. But it's just a matter of how much does a guy love basketball and want it. I think that's just something that teams have to do in the interview process. And, you know, sometimes they hire private eyes and stuff like that. You have to see if they love basketball. If that's the only knock you have on a player, and to me, in a draft like this, where there's not a lot of dynamic players, you have to still take that shot.
I think it's a good point. I mean, I that's why I still like him on my fantasy boards. And I mean, so I know some might discount the motor, but at this draft, I think he's talented enough where you take a risk on that. And in Dynasty, I'm more than happy to. I mean, I didn't downgrade him at all at the motor. I pretty much ranked him where I thought he, based on the abilities he showed. All right, let's move to another Denver.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Nuggets player, Trey Alexander, who actually was an undrafted free agent. I say undrafted. He probably negotiated with the Nuggets to get there on a two-way. So I'm going to ignore the fact he was undrafted. But for me, he was a fringe first round, maybe early second round guy. What do you see of Trey Alexander? Do you think, one, was it fair for him to be drafted just on a pure, you know, if you're ranking everyone 1 to 58, do you think, you know, that fringe first round was fair, or do you think he's better than that?
I had him as my 17th ranked player. I saw a lot in his game. You know, he has great size. And he can do it all. He averaged almost 18.6 boards, 5 assists. So, one steal. I mean, he did everything for Creighton. Great free throw shooter. Good defender. I mean, perfect point guard for today's NBA. So, yeah, you know, and right now for Denver, they have him listed as the backup point guard right now. So I have to think there was an agreement with him in Denver, you know, I'll sign as an undrafted free agent as opposed to being drafted somewhere where I'll be buried in the rotation. If they don't bring anyone else in, Trey Alexander is someone that should be in consideration for one of your later picks in your rookie drafts because he should be the backup point guard. And it's funny, when I was scouting him, his game is not exactly like Jamal Murray, but one of the things I wrote is he can be a Jamal Murray type for a team. And then he ended up going to the Nuggets. So that was funny.
Yeah, I think I remember listening to one of your pods and hearing that. And I kind of was like, you know, I can kind of see that. I mean, not to say Murray isn't quick, but he's maybe a little more methodical on the ball. And I think we see that, we've seen that in Trey Alexander's game where he's comfortable getting to spots, rising up. Now, his shot diet is a bit more that mid-range self-created diet. Do you think he'll be good enough to do that at the NBA level and maybe not a starter level, but more a backup capacity with, you know, strong minutes and usage? Or do you think he might find that something a bit tough and have to be more of a off-ball, you know, connective shooting smaller guard piece, kind of more like, I guess, in the Andrew Nembhard mold?
Yeah, well, you know, as I wrote in my notes, he has one of the best mid-range games in college. But in the NBA, they don't really like the mid-range game. They want you shooting threes or in the paint. So that might be something he has to adjust to. And like I said, he averaged almost 18 points at Creighton. That's not going to happen in the NBA. They're probably going to want him to be more facilitator, especially on the Nuggets. The only way you will see the point production is if Jamal Murray gets injured, which I've seen him limping around for Team Canada right now. He's not looking too good out there. I don't know if he should be playing right now. But, you know, if he gets in there and has a starting role, I think he can come in there and look like what he played at Creighton. Maybe the numbers reduced a little bit. But, yeah, look, keep an eye out on Trey Alexander. There's not many undrafted guys that you're looking at in a dynasty rookie draft, but he is one. If he's the backup, that's a very valuable piece.
Yeah, I definitely like the Trey Alexander shout and think he's, you know, if you once you get to even your second, if you're in a 30-team league, the early rounds of the second round, you can start looking at him as kind of that maybe overlooked player. And then just to note, I mean, do you think he could be like Trayce Jackson-Davis? He was navigated, him and his agents navigated his way to Golden State last year to 57th pick overall, but he had some very encouraging flashes. Do you think that's a pretty fair comp for what we could see from Trey Alexander this season?
Yeah, Austin Reeves did the same thing for the Lakers. Yep. So, it's very possible. I would like to know that for sure, because then that would give me a better feeling of it. Because if he was just undrafted because they didn't think he was worth drafting, that would give me more pause. But if he did have that agreement, like Trace, like Austin, I would feel even more confident about it.
Austin Reeves is a great shot with that.
I think we have to look out for Jalen Pickett, too. You know, they drafted him last year. So we'll have to see where the competition is with that. But ESPN has Trey Alexander as the backup, but we know that can change.
Yeah, and yeah, we'll have to see how the depth chart shakes out. Hopefully that'd be cool if they both play at summer league and we can just maybe see who the Nuggets are putting the ball in the hands at. I think we can see trends from summer league applied. So if both Alexander and Pickett play at summer league, it could be a little fun, almost mini training camp battle there.
Yep.
All right, let's move to a player that I'm not as high on, but I know you are, and Terrence Shannon Jr., drafted to Minnesota with the 27th overall pick. So, again, I'll start with him. And he kind of has that bully ball style a little bit, really used his athleticism and strength well, which I think he is a strong player. But he also was 23 at Illinois, kind of an older, I think, fifth-year college player who, I mean, he's strong, but also just maybe more developed than other players. Got to the rim nicely, though. His shot is probably better than you would think for that sort of player. I think 37% from deep. So what do you see in him that makes you so high on him?
To me, he's probably the best shooting guard in the class. So it's funny that he went 28 and Stephon Castle went fourth. But, you know, he's just an elite scorer. I mean, he's not James Harden, but James Harden comes to mind when you're watching him at Illinois. He obviously will not get that much of an open vehicle to be able to do that in the NBA. It won't be his team. He went to Minnesota. It's Anthony Edwards' team, of course. We just know that he can do that. And a lot of times they're still concerned for players that are so ball dominant when they get to the NBA. What are they going to do if they're not? But like you said, the three-point shooting is there. The free throw shooting is there. So the defense is there. He averaged a steal and a block per game at the guard forward spot. So, and like you said, his age being 23 with his type of game, I think that's helpful. If he was 18 with this type of game, I don't think he would play for a few years.
So I think you pretty much answered a question that I was going to push you on was, you know, will he be able to see this level of usage? And if not, well, what happens then? But it sounds like you believe he can translate well enough to a defensive role and contribute there, maybe put some more energy on that side, and then still provide enough off ball where you can be that little bit of that two-way, not fourth, but two-way tool and provide things on both ends of the court in a smaller usage role. I think that's sometimes the question for a lot of these players who were the guy at their college, or you know, if they were overseas prospects, their team coming over. Okay, if they're not necessarily good enough on ball, what else can they do? So it sounds like you think Shannon is not going to have an issue with that.
The only issue is look out for Kyle Anderson. He's a free agent. They could bring him back. If he's out of the door, that's going to open up some space for Terrence Shannon to get some minutes. And then he'll only have to compete with Nickeil Alexander-Walker. And, you know, he could play right behind Ant and Jaden McDaniels. You know, I don't see any other competition at those spots. So, but you still, when you're into the draft, you see they took the first round on him, you think he's going to play. But, you know, they drafted Leonard Miller last year, and he was incredible in the G League, and he didn't play at all. So you still have that factor. So you can't get too high on guys in the late first, even though it seems like he should have a clear path.
All right. Well, because you brought him up, and I'm going to throw Josh Minot in there too. Josh Minot and Leonard Miller, I think, both flashed really nicely in the G League and showed some good development. So do you think it's maybe one of three, you know, Minot, Leonard Miller, and Terrence Shannon Jr. maybe fighting for, you know, the 9th, 10th spot in the rotation, and one of them's going to get it, or they're going to just maybe try them out throughout the season and see which one of them plays the best, and all right, those are your minutes.
Yeah, I think Summer League is going to tell a little bit of the story with that, even though the veterans have, you know, the young veterans have an advantage because they've been in the G League. But Terrence Shannon has the highest draft capital, but we know that still doesn't just mean everything. So they're just a stacked roster ready to win a championship now. We don't even know if Dillingham is going to start. I think he's going to be the sixth man, and he was the 7th pick. So, you know, I want to see Shannon starting, but I don't think it's going to happen. They all three of them probably will just get reserve minutes on the low end also. So I hate that, but Minnesota is ready to win now.
That is for sure. You know, the Minnesota win, I would say you could argue all in by trading some future first to move into this draft at 8th and draft Rob Dillingham, which I thought was a very creative trade. I don't think we've seen anything like that before. Yeah. Trading first round picks for a rookie, I thought that was interesting, adding to their salary tax, adding to that tax bill. So yeah, Minnesota's looking to win. And it's going to be fun to see how these rookies and younger players are integrated into their system. The last player I want to bring up before we get to your list is Johnny Furphy. He fell to the 2nd round to the Pacers. I think it was mid-30s. I'm pretty certain, don't remember which draft pick because those picks were traded like candy. But what is your impression of Johnny Furphy?
Good shooter. He should come in and play a role for Indiana as probably just a shooter, though. You know, he has good size. I think he's 6'8". But being a second round pick, I don't expect him to play at all, honestly. 35th pick. But the Pacers are, their depth chart is stacked. So it'll be hard for him to break into the rotation. You know, Jarris Walker was selected 8th last year and didn't play that much. So, but if they need 3-point shooting, you know, they had injuries with Benedict Mathurin and a couple other guys. He could be used for that, but I don't think he's going to come in and really contribute much, even though he is talented. But I had him ranked 45th. No fault of his own. He's 6'9", but I just had a lot of other talented players in this class as well. I still think he can be successful. You know, he reminds me of Kyle Korver a little bit. So he can play a perfect role for a team. I just don't know if it'll be in his rookie year.
So you mentioned Furphy shooting, and that's definitely his strongest appeal. I don't think anyone's going to debate that. You know, shot about, I think, 35-36% from deep on pretty good volume, especially on a, you know, per minute rate. Do you think there's more to his game at the NBA level, or do you think Johnny Furphy is, yeah, he's probably just a shooter, develops that a bit further to a great shooter at the NBA level, and that's basically it? Or do you think we can maybe see some ancillary stats like assists or threes to round out his game a little bit more?
For me, that's why I had him 45th. I think he'll just be a spot-up shooter in the NBA. You know, he's a good cutter to the basket, but I don't really see him being more than a role player. That sounds negative, but role players are very important. So, you know, especially 3-point shooting role players. And, you know, you mentioned his three-point percentage at 35, 36%. I think he's a better shooter than those numbers. He has perfect form, a great-looking shot, and I think that will – he might shoot better in the NBA than he did in college.
I could definitely see that as an outcome. But, you know, as you said, I mean, sometimes there is a disconnect between dynasty and on-court basketball where, hey, we know a player is fantastic in their role and is invaluable to an NBA team. Okay, but does that matter for fantasy?
Right.
Spacing is so important in today's NBA. You know, he could see a lot of minutes on that. I could definitely see that coming down the line, but I'm with you. I don't really see some huge upside to his game. There are probably higher upside prospects, especially even in his draft range, even when he was picked in the mid-30s, that you could look to.
Yeah.
All right.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
I've said enough about my names that I wanted to discuss, so I asked William just to name some players and bring some players to this pod to kind of discuss here. So who do you want to start out with? Some of your targets or your guys?
Okay, I got some guys I'm excited about.
Maybe not your guys.
I got some guys I'm excited by and some guys that I don't get. Where do you want me to start?
Let's start with negatives so then we end on a high note.
Okay, this is perfect because I want to hear your opinion on Reed Shepherd. I don't get it. I'm hearing glowing reviews from every single analyzer, whatever you want to call them. But I don't get it with Reed Shepherd for number three for the Rockets. How do you feel about him?
I mean, I'm a Rockets fan. That's who I wanted to pick there. I mean, for our team, I think he's a great fit just because, yes, he is small. I think it's would be silly not to mention that and not to mention that his size could be a hindrance at the NBA level. That said, I think he's his shooting percentages were off the charts on good volume. You know, you're shooting over 50% from deep. That raises your eyebrows at any level of the game. I do question slightly if he can get his shot off with the same efficiency and the same motions at the NBA level with greater length. And his defense may just not be as impactful only because he is, I think, a little small and his point of attack defense, especially in isolation defense, that's a little bit of a worrying point. But I think when you just see all the good things he does, the steals he racks up, and off-ball defense, the way his shooting helps other players on the court, the way he can open up, you know, driving lanes or avenues or lanes for himself or for others with that gravity he can provide. And I think not like fantastic passing. He's not like passing guys open left and right. But solid passing with solid vision, I think he can bring a lot to the table. And I'm pretty high on him, especially for fantasy, when you see that stats translations. But do you think maybe that lack of size and maybe lack of even on-ball creation, is that what kind of holds you back from him?
Definitely. Like, when I'm scouting players, one of the things I look at is, are players like him in the NBA successful? And I don't see too many 6'2 shooting guards that are successful like that. So, I mean, the league is normally trending toward taller players. You know, we've seen it with the Cavs. That didn't really work out. Will they trade one of them? We don't know. With the Hawks, two point guards, will you trade one of them? So, like, and Reed Shepherd is, like I said, 6'2". They say he can play point guard. I didn't see him play point guard in Kentucky. You know, that was Dillingham. So, if he's not a point guard, he's an undersized two. The good thing is he's with Amen Thompson for the future. He can offset that size. But right now you have Fred VanVleet, one of the top 15 point guards in the league. I don't see – he just flat out cannot play with Fred VanVleet. So what is – I just don't get that. I mean, for the third pick, I think you could have got something better than Reed Shepard. I would have gave it that pick up for Brandon Ingram.
That would have been interesting. I know we went back and forth a little bit around the draft on that. I don't know if I would have done that, but I do share your concern. And I think – I just – with people who say that he can be the on-ball point guard and your main guy, I am with you there. I don't necessarily see that player. And I think that's not in his future. I mean, just maybe a small sliver if he's just that dang good. I didn't see that on tape. As you said, he really wasn't the point guard at Kentucky, even in his limited minutes. He was playing off guard. You saw that in his usage and shot attempts. So I think that's something important to keep in mind with Reed Shepard. I'm with you there.
How many minutes do you think he'll play as a rookie?
Ooh.
It took A-Man a little while to get started.
It did. And we re-signed Aaron Holiday earlier. That was earlier today, I believe. I mean, it wasn't for any huge contract. It was a 1 year of a team option for about $5 million each per year. I don't think it's in the way. I think it's going to depend on how much we value the shooting, though, and in the right lineup configurations. As you said, I think playing Reed Shepard and Fred VanVleet together is not going to be too smart. So are you maybe seeing Reed Shepard play in different lineup configurations in the backup to VanVleet's minutes? Okay, that's like 10-15 minutes a game to start. So I think we'll see him probably on the lower end, maybe 10-15 if he is even in the rotation to begin. And then depending on how valuable that off-ball game, that connective game, that shooting is, maybe he gets up to 20. I don't think I can get much further than that, at least for year one.
Well, another guy, I'm sorry to bring you down being a Rockets fan. Congratulations on your third pick.
You know? Congratulations on the third pick that you don't think we should have drafted yet. No, all good.
But my next guy, since we're talking negative, Jarrett McCain, in that same vein. He's a point guard, 6'3 at Duke. Solid. I figured he'd be a backup point guard at NBA. Went 16 to Philadelphia. I don't like that fit. Do you like that fit?
No, I mean, I think we were just talking about with Reed Shepard that he wasn't necessarily playing on ball too much at Kentucky. I mean, McCain, I think, was even worse in that regard. I mean, he had decent usage, but I didn't really see him operating the pick and roll and navigating like we see at the NBA level. I mean, I think he was like 1.5-2 assists per game. It really wasn't there that much. So, yeah, I mean, I think size, especially with Maxey, I mean, if you're playing Maxey and McCain together, that's – you're asking, like, if you're playing the Knicks, you're just going to get kind of feel like crushed to oblivion or something there.
Yeah, that was a surprising pick for me. But, you know, he shot 41.5% from three. I think the three-point shooters got bumped up this year in this draft class. So I guess that is it. All right, let's go to some positives. Should I start with the obvious and Alex Sarr? I think it's unquestioned that he's going to be the number one rookie in Dynasty. Do you agree with that?
I actually did have Reed Shepard. I have Reed Shepard one. I'll unveil the curtain a little bit, but Sarr was in the same tier. I think there's a lot of guys you could argue are similar depending on your level of confidence in them. But no, I'm pretty high on Sarr as well. So
yeah,
he's in that tier one.
With the Wizards especially, you know, if he went to the Hawks, he would be, you know, in a sketchy spot. But with the Wizards, I think it's going to be his team. They're going to allow him to play, allow him to fail, learn, grow, and you know, we saw what Daniel Gafford did, and I think Sarr has a better offensive game, so it should be – I'm excited by Alex Sarr. So if I had a first pick, that's who I would be looking at. Also, if we're not going to, you know, take the low-hanging fruit with the number two pick, I'm very excited about how the Bulls got Matas Buzelis at 11. Now, he was my fourth-ranked prospect, and I think they – lucked into getting a player that good at pick 11 because I was worried about the Bulls. They have a lack of talent.
That's one way to put it, yes.
So Matas Buzelis should come in. If he's not starting, he should get good minutes. You shouldn't have to worry about that. So I think he's a guy to look out for in Dynasty Fantasy. You agree?
For Buzelis or sorry? Or
either Buzelis, one.
Buzelis. Buzelis. I mean, they did sign Jalen Smith, so, you know, they got a big roadblock in front of him there. No, I mean, that's obviously not great for his immediate minutes, but the Bulls seem to be going a little younger. I think it's very highly unlikely they bring back DeMar DeRozan at this point with how close, relatively close they are to that luxury tax line. I can't see them bringing him back. So I'm hoping they lean a little young, which would signify, Buzelis should be in just a run there. Do you think, though, I mean, on film, I saw Buzelis, compete, but was still kind of bothered by more physical players. Do you think he's ready for rotation minutes at the NBA level? And can he provide enough offensively with his shot? He's kind of struggled with his shot at the G League a little bit.
Yeah, he did struggle with his shot a little bit. He admitted that. He said, but all his life he's been a good shooter. He just had a down season. And you can see that in his form, I believe. But, he's 6'10", and he has a great handle. So he can create for himself. He is 210 pounds, but I'm not too worried about that because, as we mentioned, how the league is getting to the skinnier bigs. Some matchups, of course, is going to be a problem. But and they do still have Vucevic in there to help him out. But, he's still hanging around. But I think Matas Buzelis is the future of the Bulls. Like you said, especially if DeRozan's gone, you need to go with the youth movement. You have Giddey and Buzelis and, Coby White, if he stays there. I'm excited about his future.
Yeah, and I'm glad the Bulls took him because when he was available to him, I still would have preferred Collier, frankly, for them. But Buzelis, I think, was the right idea of getting someone who is young, can develop, as opposed to some, we'll say in quotes, win now or older rookie prospect. Going back to Sarr, I criticize a little bit of maybe his dribble and self-creation game a little bit, along with a developing shot. Do you think that the Wizards are just going to give him all his opportunity to work on that game and work on his dribble game too? It seems like his self-creation, he wants to do that. Do you think that's an aspect of his game that we're going to see develop in the upcoming seasons?
I definitely do. He is, 19? 19.
Around 19.
He can do everything on the court. The dribbling needs to be improved. A little bit of the post moves with his strength needs to get a little better. But, I love everything about his game, and it projects to get better each year, Sometimes we look at players and see what they can't do, but with today's NBA coaching, there's so many things that they can grow into. I remember, a lot of people want prospects to be perfect. I remember when LeBron was with the Heat, there were so many deficiencies in his game. They said, he needs to do this. He needs to get a post game. He needs to get the three-point shot. And he worked on that every year and got better. So it's no reason Alex Sarr at 19 should not be able to continue to get better at everything. And he's already good at most things.
Yeah, that's a good point, and I'm excited to see if he can bring that more on-ball game and usage and really pump that up a little bit to round out his defensive game, which I think is already fantastic for a prospect. Yeah, that makes him a much more exciting prospect for Dynasty as well. Usage is king, really. You get on the court, you see minutes, you get usage, you're going to get fantasy stats. So I think that would be exciting for Sarr if that comes through and that develops.
And I think he already has gained 20 pounds since his season ended. So that should help him with post play as well.
Yeah, that would be. Yeah, if Sarr can put on a little bit more heft and then keep that mobility that he has, I think that really makes him special. Yeah, that's going to be fun. I'm excited to see how they utilize him year one, or if Kyle Kuzma is going to block him a little bit there. It's probably not a lot. That's not going to. I don't think that's going to be the case. Sarr is going to see his minutes.
It might.
We'll see. We'll see on that. On that note, I think that did you have any other prospects or players that you wanted to discuss?
If I wanted to say one more, we could do it quick. The Hornets selected Tijon Salon. He was my 20th ranked player. I was not super high on him. But with the Hornets that we have here in North Carolina, where I am, it's not a good team. When PJ Washington left, there was a hole there. Grant Williams, he's not the future. Tijon Salon could see minutes this year that are probably not being expected. So I don't know how the Dynasty fantasy community is looking at him. He's kind of raw. He's not there. But one of the main things you're looking for in Dynasty fantasy is minutes. And he should be able to get some in Charlotte.
Yeah, I can't speak on the consensus of the Dynasty analyst community. I know for me, I kind of raised my eyebrows a little bit. Because, if Charlotte's drafting him 6, he's probably going to get more minutes earlier than we expected with the state of the team currently out there in Charlotte. And, he's probably going to get more run. We're going to see him earlier at the NBA court and see what he can do, see what he can produce. I mean, his NBA frame, I think, is super, super ideal. You know, he's 6'9", 6'9", 6'10", good wingspan, good weight. Maybe didn't always show up in the defensive stats, but, I mean, I think we could see that and pair that with some shooting and any other development. Yeah, that could – he's someone who could pop. I say could pop. We'll have to see. I wasn't – like you, I wasn't as high as him as where he was drafted at 6. But, I mean, I'm not going to foreclose on him developing skills, especially at that age. You don't want to – you can't slam shut that door.
Right. And he's 18. You know, he'll grow with the team. It might be a learning curve. But and there was talk today that Miles Bridges may be out of the door and sign with someone else, even though his market is not looking big, especially if he leaves. Then Tijon Salon, you need to definitely have him on your radar.
Yeah. If Bridges leaves, then that's what, about 30 minutes per game that's gone. That's a pretty big hole. Even if you don't think Salon is fully ready.
Right.
Okay. Well, they're going to find probably some minutes for him there early. All right. On that note, we'll leave it at that. That was a pretty hefty list of prospects that we discussed, just pretty much either that we were higher on, lower on, or maybe we differed on, which I think is good. I think that's where our discussion is good, to hear both sides of that and then, you know, give y'all listeners a pretty kind of fully idea of both sides of the coin with these prospects. With that said, thank you for coming on. Appreciate you taking the time out to come on here on the pod. Where can the people find you, and what are you currently doing right now?
Thanks again, Mark. It was great being on your show. Tons of fun. Love talking Dynasty, anything rookie. So, you know, you find me at the All Rookie Podcast on all platforms, even YouTube, on Twitter at William Is Bill. All rookie content all the time, and I can't wait for the Summer League. I'll be reporting on that as well. And anything rookie, just hit me up.
That's great.
Rockets fans, do not kill me. I'm sorry.
I don't know if you know Rockets Twitter. They can be a fun group of people on there. I'll just leave it at that. All right, thank you again for coming on the pod.
Thank you.
All right, and that was, again, at William Is Bill of the All Rookie Podcast. Really excited to have him on. He spent a lot of time scouting these prospects, so you know he knows, has a good idea of what he's talking about. With that said, my own rookie rankings for 2024 draft were released this past weekend. You can get access to them with the NBA Fantasy Pass over at sportsethos.com. We have a great sale going on now. You can lock in that price. So be sure to check those out, along with all the other additional content we'll have in the offseason as we go through Summer League analysis. More top 350 Dynasty rankings will be out here soon after free agency. And heading into, once we get through the offseason, you know we'll have draft guide content coming out for both redraft and fantasy leagues. With that said, we'll see what happens in the next couple of days of free agency, and then soon enough, we'll be in the Summer League. See you next time.